Blue Wire.
Three on the way! Yes! Paul George nails it!
For the win!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the B-Ball Index podcast brought to you this week by Untuck It and Manscaped. I am your host for today, Krandris McBasketball, but, you know, friends call me Tim. And speaking of friends, we're joined today by Mike Vigneault. Is that correct? Is that
how to say your last name? That's how to say it. Perfect. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. Hey, that was my question. I'm having a great day. I'm excited to talk to some Suns basketball. Mike is joining us today directly from Phoenix, Arizona, where he's patiently waiting for this to end so he can go watch the Suns game in person. Mike, yep. if you don't follow him on Twitter, you're not familiar with his podcast, he does great work, colleague of ours at the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and he co-hosts the Timeline podcast, which covers the Suns on a regular basis. And I would have to imagine, Mike, it's been a pretty good year so far. Some exciting stuff. What have your main impressions been of the year so far?
I thought the Suns had a good offseason. You came on, we talked about it on our podcast. Thank you again for coming on and talking about it with us. I thought it was a good offseason, but for anyone to say that they predicted this start, I think they would be lying. I think this is about as surprising as it can get from the Phoenix Suns. Now, we're talking about this before the Miami Heat game, so currently they're 5-2. And everything, they're kind of firing on all cylinders in just about every way possible. So I think that is a surprise.
For sure, yeah. And if we just want to run quickly through some of their performance numbers so far. So they've had an offensive rating of 109.1. Their luck-adjusted offensive rating. So taking more of a look at some of those process components, more so than just the results, and trying to tease out some of the noise in the data. For some teams, this will be higher. For some, it'll be lower. You can get a sense of, you know, are they for real? Is this just a mirage? The Suns, so their true offensive rating was 109.1. Their luck-adjusted offensive rating was 109.2. So they've been exactly what they've showed us there. And then defensively, they've been a little bit lucky. Their true defensive rating has been a 101. Their luck-adjusted defensive rating, a 102.3. So they've been about a point and a half lucky on defense, but still – they've got the second best luck adjusted net rating in the NBA behind the Bucks. So they've had an incredible start. Like you said, I think they're 5-2 right now. And their, you know, luck adjusted, here's what we'd expect their record to be, was before the Miami game, it was like 4.5 and 2.5. So they've performed, and their record and even their ratings have been just about exactly what we would have expected. So they've not just the results have been good early on, but the process seems to really have been improving. And like you said, I joined you on your podcast and we talked about some of the offseason moves, who to keep an eye out for. Who would you say has surprised you most this year? Because we already had our perceptions going into the year, but who has really taken a jump that's helped this team get to where they are today?
I think that this is the easiest question to answer, and it is the splash volcano himself, Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines has stepped in DeAndre Ayton's absence, which does suck. You know, as far as Suns fans go, everything is going really great, except for the fact that the number one pick from last year is suspended for 25 games due to taking a diuretic, basically, probably hiding something else he took. So for Aaron Baines to step in and play as well as he has been a massive surprise. Now, we have seen him play well in the past for Boston, but just a couple things on him. Last season was the first season that Aaron Baines began even attempting three-pointers. In his first six seasons, he attempted 27 total three-pointers for all six seasons combined. Last season, he only attempted 61 for the entire season. This season, through seven games, he's already attempted 31 total, and he's shooting 48% on those threes. It's the most he's ever attempted in a season, obviously, because previously it was 1.2 per game. This year he's up to 4.4, and he's essentially making almost half of those three-pointers. To expect a guy who's that big, who plays that good of defense, to hit threes at that level, it's the biggest surprise I can think of. And I think for him, Aaron Baines is such a unique player in that the combination of the massive screens that he sets, which I think is one of the most underrated skills in basketball, and shooting three-pointers, that's just a combination that I don't know that I've ever seen in a player, you know, to be able to do both of those things as well as he has. I'm not sure as far as how sustainable that is, but I will say all of them are wide open. Mm-hmm. Like, he's never really guarded from the three-point lines because of who he is. And if he does begin to be guarded at that level on the court, that opens up other guys. That pulls the best defender out of the paint. So I'm not sure what that's going to be like. You know, it does raise the question, what is the offense going to look like when DeAndre Ayton is back? But for right now, I think the biggest surprise has to be Aaron Baines.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He's, you know, rolling and popping. He's got it both going, setting on-ball screens, off-ball screens. We've seen, and as a Laker fan, I watch all the time, big men try to, if they're a shooter, a lot of times they'll try to slip that and get to their spot and try to pick and pop, but they're not making contact. So the defense doesn't really need to react or respect that initial action. And when that's happening, they're not getting themselves open. Baines is making that contact, taking a guy out, creating a two-on-one situation, and then getting to his spot. And that helps him out. He's been shooting fantastic, like you've said, and it also helps his teammates out. And I think we can see that with, you know, Devin Booker running the pick and roll. Some of the other guys we've talked about on their team. One player that I've found his data interesting so far has been Kelly Oubre Jr. His top play type thus far has been transition. He's killing it there. More of in a high efficiency area than some other types of attacks, but he, in our database, had never had a positive player impact plus minus season offensively or defensively. Not a single season where either of those was positive. And this year, both are positive. So that kind of impact from someone who was brought into the team this year, I mean, he's a relatively young player, and you're hoping to get the most out of him that you can. But I think he has to be surprising as well, just in terms of impact, because we've just never seen this from him. From your perspective, has anything changed with him, or where are you seeing that kind of impact jump with Oubre?
So I think Ricky Rubio deserves some credit there, especially for the transition offense. We've never really had a guy like him for the Suns, at least last season when Kelly Oubre was on the Suns. Nobody was able to get him the ball in transition like he could. And if you look at the starting lineup, which is Ricky Rubio, Devin Booker, Kelly Oubre Jr., Dario Saric, and Aaron Baines, Kelly Oubre is kind of the only athlete, like the quick twitch athlete, that can get down in transition and score in transition. So it kind of makes sense that that's kind of where he's making his points or getting the most possible points per possession out of the offense. But I think a big thing with Kelly Oubre Jr., and I just talked to Mike Prada from SB Nation about this, and he put it a good way. He said the more you can limit the amount of dribbles that Kelly Oubre is actually performing on a play, the better he is. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Monty Williams. Giving Kelly Oubre dribble handoffs and screens and just letting him go fully downhill towards the basket is the best way to utilize him. And it's predictable because he doesn't pass out of it. But if you can create an offense with enough space so that that is effective, then I think you're getting the most out of him. So a lot of it, I think, is just because of the scheme that's been used for him. And something that we talked about as well, actually, when you came on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a concern of mine, and more so a question mark than something that I knew wasn't going to be good, just because with the data that we had, looking back a couple years to when Monty last was head coach, I think was, what, 2013, 2014? It was a while ago. It was almost a different era in the NBA. And if you look back to that film, just the types of actions, the types of sets that they were running were good. They were fine for that time frame. And he actually graded out very well in our optimization data. But my concern going into this year was, if he hasn't changed in those, what, 5 or 6 years, you can't run that stuff that he ran then this year and succeed with it. And I mean, to his credit, and it has been like half a decade, He very clearly has evolved and has, I think, done a pretty good job at tailoring what they're doing to the skill sets that they have, just in the way that you mentioned with Oubre. Has anything else stood out to you with regard to Monty's scheme so far?
Yeah, I think I'm shocked at how good Monty has been so far for the Phoenix Suns. And I think you're right, because if you look at the last time he was a head coach, it looks like a different era of the NBA, and it was only 5 years ago, basically, but the NBA has changed so dramatically in that time that he had to change with it in order to be a successful coach. And he talked a lot about how he's changed, and I think the whole time my only thought was, we have to see it to see if that's real. You can say a lot of things, but we have to see if it's real. And for him, he's sped up the offense. They're faster. They shoot a lot of threes. And they run – the offense is relatively predictable. It's a horns offense, lots of A-shaped offense, essentially, with guys coming around and curling around screens at the elbow. But I think that the personnel he has, where guys catch the ball, it's so much about what they're actually good at. And defensively, what I think is brilliant about what he does is he's using the guys who are young, athletic, and long. And basically, Mike Prada also wrote about this. We just talked about it. Sorry if he's on my mind a lot. But he referred to it as pre-rotations. And what the Suns do is they gamble a lot on any guys entering into the paint. And they have guys who, on the weak side of the defense, will actually wander off into what they call the nail, which is around the free throw line area, so that when guys are entering into the paint, there's enough guys packed into the paint that they're getting surrounded. Now, that does lead to a lot of open three-pointers, or what could potentially be a lot of open three-pointers. And I think when you talk about the luck-adjusted numbers, I think a lot of that has to do with guys missing those open three-pointers. But they have the personnel that's able to respond to that and actually get back out to the three-point shooters as long as they stay disciplined. And I think that's why James Jones did such a good job with filling this roster out with a bunch of pros, you know, guys who played on good teams in the past and who will stick to the schemes, because that's necessary for a type of defense like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That really, really great insight so far, Mike. Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. The holidays are almost here. And you know what that means, gifts. And what better gift to give a guy in your life than a stylish shirt that fits just right? Unlike most brands, Untucked shirts are actually designed to be worn untucked. Untucked shirts always fall at just that right length, no matter your size. So he or you look casual and sharp at all times. I know for me, it's always a hassle going out and trying to find an outfit to wear. I've got, you know, some great short sleeve shirts, I've got some good long sleeve ones, but any of the sharp looking long sleeve ones are designed to be worn at work, and they're just not the right size, not the right length. So Untucked is a great place. I'm going to be checking it out. You should check it out and be using promo code BLUE at checkout to get 20% off on your order. It's such a frustrating process, and Untucked's created just the perfect product to fill that exact need. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untucked is the way to go. So visit untucked.com and use promo code BLUE at checkout to get 20% off. That's untucked.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off. Support for Blue Wire comes from Manscaped, who's number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Shaving down there can be way more timely, difficult, and even painful than it needs to be. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag. Manscaping accidents can finally be a thing of the past. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits, but why aren't you putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code BLUEWIRE at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code BLUEWIRE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code BLUEWIRE. All right, welcome back to the B-Ball Index podcast. Again, this week brought to you on the Blue Wire Podcast Network through Manscaped and Untucked. We're talking Suns, and I erroneously said that Kelly Oubre Jr. was only relatively young. He's pretty young. He's 23. He still has a couple good years of growth in him. Another young guy that we had spoken about on your podcast was Mikal Bridges. And he was someone I was excited about. He's someone that our data really liked last year. He graded out as I believe a top five, top 10. I think it was top 10 perimeter defender in the league. And so far this year, I pulled up the Suns synergy page, and he's only 10th in terms of offensive scoring possessions on the team. Is that what his role is going to be this year? Should we expect more or less from Bridges? And what, any other surprising usage from players so far this year?
So Bridges has been a really interesting player so far this season, because what Monty is running is what he describes as a 0.5 offense. The idea is that you make a decision within 0.5 seconds of touching the ball. That decision can be pass, shoot, or drive. It's an idea. It's not uncommon, right? The Spurs are, I think, most famous for running this kind of offense. And for whatever reason, that style of offense has not translated very well for Mikal Bridges. I think part of that is his release on the three-point shot is not overly quick. I mean, for a guy with as long of arms as he has, it can probably be difficult to put up a shot too quick. So I think his amount of minutes, he actually played the most minutes for the Suns last season, so I think that probably helped him a little bit. This season, his minutes have gone down on a per game basis pretty dramatically, because offensively, he's not able to make those quick decisions as well as some of the guys who've been in the NBA a lot longer. His defense is still there. He still has the insanely long arms, but I don't think he's been able to impact the game as well as he did last season, because the offense has not quite clicked for him yet. I do think that he is more capable as a cutter than he's been in the past, especially for the Suns, because they really didn't have guys that can make those difficult passes to cutters. Now with Ricky Rubio and even guys like Dario Saric, who can make those passes on cuts, I think he can find ways to become more successful within the offense. But so far, it's been kind of difficult for him. I think if you want to talk about guys that have had surprising usage so far, we have to talk about Devin Booker. Obviously, this is the best player on the Suns. We haven't talked about him yet. Last season, he averaged 26 points, 4 rebounds, and 6.8 assists. So far this season, he's averaging 26 points, 3.6 rebounds, and 5 assists. It doesn't sound too different, but if you look into it a little deeper, his true shooting percentage has risen every season. He's currently the second highest of any player averaging over 25 points, only second to Cat, Karl-Anthony Towns, who's a center, so obviously should have a high true shooting percentage, but he can shoot threes. Cat's another story. But Devin Booker, the big change with him is that he's been assisted on 55.9% of his field goals, which is up from only 36% last season. Remember Devin Booker, when he came into the league, his comp wasn't this like Kobe light, which is kind of how he plays now. It was Klay Thompson. The idea around Devin Booker is that he'll be an excellent off-ball player that will allow you to space the floor. He came in and immediately was able to run pick and rolls better than anyone had expected. But he still had that off-ball game in him. And I think now with the spacing on the floor, with Ricky Rubio able to take some of the playmaking away from him, he's been able to get that true shooting percentage up to like 65%, which is insane for a guy like Devin Booker. And we'll see if it's sustainable, of course. That's kind of the idea of talking about basketball this early in the season. Is anything sustainable? But I mean, if we're going to talk about guys who have changed, I think Devin Booker has to be a part of that conversation.
For sure. And we gave Ricky Rubio a shout out earlier in the podcast, and this might be another place where he deserves some credit, being placed on the team in the role he is, allowing Booker to play a little bit more off ball and getting him the ball in those great situations. And just looking through some of Booker's data, he scored 21 points so far this year just off of dump offs, where he's just kind of standing around the rim, somebody breaks down the defense, and he's just there. Those are numbers that you see from big men, not from players doing what Devin Booker usually does. So that just, I think, illustrates a little bit how much the structure around him and the roster around him has transformed and enabled him to get some of those easier possessions the way that we would expect somebody, the way we would expect most players to score. He doesn't need to be a Kobe light, and ideally you wouldn't have him as a Kobe light, because he's got a great skill set and there are better ways to leverage that, and you can lean on the Kobe piece of it if you need to, but that shouldn't be the first line of attack. And I think the Suns have done a good job trying to put him in better positions to succeed. Although I will say, and again, very early season, but Booker's player impact plus minus has taken a drop this year. So that'll be interesting to monitor moving forward. Although his, like you said, his efficiency has been pretty good. And I think maybe a piece of that could be role change for him. Maybe less reliance on him as a team with the way that they're running their scheme, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. So something to monitor. Other things to monitor. Are there any other pieces that you would say need to fall in place? One thing that stood out to me is Frank Kaminsky, who's a good, strong perimeter shooter, has had really good perimeter shooting and roll gravity grades in the past at B-Ball Index, largely driven by his picking and popping ability. He's only 3-for-13 on pops this year. So that's going to get better. I would expect that to improve quite a bit. Are there any other pieces that, you know, it just hasn't quite clicked yet, but are something that we should expect to give the Suns a boost moving forward?
There's two things that stand out to me in this question. The first one is Dario Saric. Now, Dario Saric, a lot of Sixers fans or even Timberwolves fans, they kind of told me before the season began, is Saric always starts out slow. I have a feeling that part of that has to do with his conditioning. He looks a little soft coming into the season, and he has looked a little soft in previous seasons. In 2017-2018, he shot 36% before January 1st and 41% afterwards. And in 2018-19, 33% before January 1st and 39% after. He's currently shooting 33% from the three-point line. This is all three-point stats, by the way. And I would expect that his three-point percentage can get better. Saric is a good shooter, and he's only making one out of every three three-point shots so far. And I think that can get better. In that starting lineup, he gets open shots as well. And, you know, Saric is interesting because you can utilize him in so many different ways. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife, but I think mainly that shooting has to get better. And the other thing that stands out for me so far is Ricky Rubio's shooting not from three. I know most people, when they think of a problem with Ricky Rubio's shooting, they probably initially think the three-point line. He's currently shooting 40% from three, only on 15 attempts. So I'm not going to say that that's sustainable yet, but the weirdest part with Rubio's shooting currently is he's shooting 36% from two-point range, which is bizarre from him. He's never been that bad in a season before. Even his rookie year, he shot better than he's currently shooting from the two-point percentage, and he's actually gotten better at finishing. And I actually expect that Rubio's shooting from inside the arc will actually get a little better, and that's mostly finishing. I don't want a lot of mid-range shots from Rubio, but the weirdest thing with Rubio is he can't really shoot on the move at all. So either it's a layup or it's a catch and shoot. So for him, I think the entirety of his shooting percentage has to do with decisions that he's been making. And he's good at making decisions normally. So I think if he starts to cut out some of those moving shots, a lot of little fades to the left off the backboard that just don't look good at all, which he was making in the World Cup. So I think that's why he's shooting them now. They're just not great shots in the NBA. And I think over time, Rubio's shooting will get better from inside the arc and Saric's will get better from outside the arc.
Yeah, that'll be a good thing to monitor. And just like you were saying, so Rubio catching and shooting has been scoring 1.5 points per possession. Very, very good. And off the dribble has been shooting 0.5 points per possession. So just such a drastic difference there. He's never been a great finisher around the rim, but he's in a lot of lineups now that have quite a bit of spacing. With the big men that the Suns have been rolling out there. I don't know how that changes once Ayton is able to return, but I think that certainly plays into Rubio's favor, and I would expect him to shoot a little bit better inside the arc, like you were saying, moving forward. He's 4-for-12 in transition so far, and he can do much, much better than that. He's been very good spotting up, but it's been those, like you said, the in-between game and then getting to the rim, he can certainly improve. Lots of exciting things with this team. We get back to, I have a couple more stats for you. They are top five in the fewest percentage of shots allowed from three. So I think that's a big thing. We know from a lot of research from Nylon Calculus that it's not really something within your control as a team too much to influence whether threes go in or not. There's so much variance there, and year after year, there's not much stability. So individual players and teams aren't really impacting that. But what you can try to influence is the percentage of shots that are contested tightly, or just not allowed at all. And the Suns have been doing a pretty good job of just not allowing shots from three. And that is something that bodes really well for them moving forward. Because if you're giving up a lot of threes, you might get lucky sometimes, you might get unlucky, But if you just don't allow those and you're forcing teams to play in the in-between game and trying to score everything at the rim, you can be pretty good. The Suns have also been a little bit high with their free throw shooting and three-point shooting in terms of their rates, but nothing unsustainable. And I guess my final question to you, Mike, and I'll let you go run over to the game, is what should our new expectations be for the Suns team performance moving forward? Going into the year, not too many people had them as a playoff team, but at this point, what I think that's a realistic possibility. And where would you what are your expectations at this point, assuming no major injuries, assuming Ayton comes back and is playing like he did last year? Where do you see this team going?
I think the conversation about the Suns is all about how sustainable this is going forward. And I know it's a little scary for Suns fans to even mention the P word in the playoffs, but the Golden State Warriors are now out of that race. The Sacramento Kings are a bit of an unknown, but don't look to be in the race that they were last year. Dallas is really excellent, but they're relying on a lot of players who contribute that maybe have never contributed at this rate in the past. And the Suns are not really relying on a lot of, like, say, rookies overperforming or second-year players overperforming. It's mostly guys in their mid-20s who are playing really smart basketball. And I think that it's hard for, let's say you are on the team, it would be impossible for you to not say that they can make the playoffs at this point. From an outsider's perspective, I think that should be the goal. I think that there's a chance with Ayton being out, if a player gets injured, like say Baines goes down, that throws a wrench in all of this. And I think that's the biggest issue with DeAndre Ayton not playing these games, is that we have 25 games without a player that has nothing to do with injuries, and that hurts the depth really badly. But I think that this is a little more sustainable than a lot of people realize looking at it initially. Here's a good stat that was actually tweeted by Dave King, who's the managing editor of Bright Side of the Suns, a Suns blog. The Suns are number two in the league in generating wide open shots, but they're only 11th in making those wide open shots. So what they're doing right now appears to be sustainable on offense. Now, they have to continue really contesting three-pointers because they gamble a lot and they pack the paint a lot, which leaves those three-pointers open, and they have to really run out there to contest them. But if they can continue to do that, I don't see a reason right now why they couldn't get to that playoff race, at least as long as they stay healthy.
If I were a Suns fan, it would be almost uncomfortable hearing those words, but the process is there. The results are there so far, and it looks like the results are going to continue being there. And from the perspective of our data, we have them in the playoffs. And like you said, the Warriors aren't going to make it. The Kings, I think the coaching change they made is going to negatively impact them more so than perhaps any other team. And last year, they already, from a record standpoint, overperformed what we would have said their luck-adjusted performance was already. So they're going to be going from overperforming where you are to probably underperforming where you are. So there's a good shot they don't make it. And the Suns have a great opportunity, if they keep playing like they're playing, to fit right in there. I don't think they'll be a home court team, but they've got a really good shot of being in that 5-8 range and being a pretty fun team to watch this year.
I agree. And all credit to Monty Williams and James Jones. I think James Jones understanding the type of players that Monty Williams would need in order to operate sort of the Spurs-ish system that he's trying to operate. I think, you know, for to be this good early on for a team that's been so garbage for such a long time, they have to be on the same page at every level. That's, you know, and I don't want to give Sarver credit here, so I'm just going to say at management and coaching and player level. And I think so far, it's looked like a team that's on the same page there. And it's just all about how long it can last and how healthy they can stay.
For sure. Yeah, it'll be an exciting year. Surely talk to you some more throughout the year and see how things are going. Thank you, Mike, for joining us. Is there anything that the listeners should be checking out?
Yeah, definitely. Listen to our podcast. It's the Timeline of Phoenix Suns podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Protected Pick. I'm very sarcastic. If you do follow me on Twitter, I'll warn you right now, I'm very sarcastic on Twitter, but I will be a fun follow. I can promise you that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to having more conversations with you, Tim, about the Suns in the future, hopefully eventually in the playoffs.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Mike, for joining us. I guess to all the listeners, thank you for being with us today. You can follow Mike, like he said, at Protected Pick. You can follow me at Tim_MBA and the mothership over at @V_BBall_Index. Go jump on the site, follow the Twitter. We have our $5 data and tools package out there. We just added a spreadsheet today. We added a spreadsheet yesterday. We have luck-adjusted lineup data in there now. We have advanced box scores that you can generate. Both of those going back to the 2000-2001 season for any single game. So there's a lot of cool stuff you can do with those. It's getting to the point where there are so many people in these spreadsheets that it's hard to screenshot things without people, you know, changing filters or having their cursor in the way. So definitely check those out. It's like the price of a coffee a month. Let's keep watching some good basketball. Mike, thank you for joining us. I'll let you go now.
Thanks, Tim.
Enjoy the game.